How many people like waiting? We have good waiters here. Okay. Well, if you serve in a restaurant, you're a waiter. So, but anyway, all right. I don't know about you. I don't enjoy waiting too much. You know, especially like when you go to a restaurant, you know, you walk in the door and they're like, it'll be 50 minutes. And you're kind of stuck there. You got one butt cheek on a hard bench because it's so crowded. And they give you that dumb buzzer thing just waiting for it to light up. You know, you feel like you win the lottery when it finally does. And people walking past, all the servers walking past you with all the food for other people. And you're just like, oh, I want that. No, I want that. I want that. And it's horrible, isn't it? It can be agony. But, or how about waiting at the doctor's office? You know, Gino's not here today, so I can talk about this. I mean, that's the worst, isn't it? It seems doctors are always running late. I mean, you can go in the doctor's office 3 hours later than your appointment. They'll say, well, he's running a little late, so you're still fine. And you're just like, ah, and then you have to sit in that waiting area, and it's hot, and it's like packed with all people, and you know they're all sick too, so now you're trading germs, which is probably pretty good for you. And then you finally get called. You're like, yes, I get called. And they take you in the room. You sit on the exam table. And they say, just wait for a few minutes for the doctor to come. At least you had a comfortable chair in the other room. Now you're waiting again. You're just like, man, this isn't fair. I think that's why they call us patients. Doctors call us patients because we're waiting all the time. And we're just like, man, this is tough. But how about waiting on God? How many of you say, oh, I love it when I wait on God? That can be just as tough, can it? You know, when I was 17 years old, I was thinking back on some things this week, and as I was reading this passage, something kept coming back to my mind. And when I was 17 years old, I went to my first real rock concert. You know, I'd been to concerts like at church, and you have Christian artists and things, and that's kind of cool. But this was a real rock concert that my brother and I went to, no parents or anything, and it was U2 at the Spectrum. That's how old I am. U2 at the Spectrum, when U2 was really good, back when they were good, the Unforgettable Fire Tour, okay? If any of you remember that album. But, man, it was amazing. And back then, they used to close their concert. Their concert was awesome. It was 2 hours long and everything. But they would close their concert with this song, and it was called 40. And it was a song that was based on Psalm 40. Isn't that neat? So they would start singing the song, and here's how it started. It says, I waited patiently for the Lord. He inclined and heard my cry. He brought me up out of the pit, out of the mire and clay. I will sing a new song. I will sing a new song. Any of you remember that song? And then they would get to this chorus, and this chorus, the whole audience would start singing with them. They would cry out. They'd say, how long to sing this song? How long? How long? How long to sing this song? And it was that chorus, it would reverberate. In fact, as they would do it, one of the band members would slip out while the whole audience was singing until there was nobody on stage, and it's just the audience singing this. And then it would fill the arena, and then it would fill the streets as the audience would leave because everybody would go back to their car singing, how long to sing this song? And, you know, I thought about that this week, and all the times in waiting on God, you know, and as I was reading our passage this morning, I'm thinking, how long do we need to wait, or how long must we sing this song? You know, when I graduated college, and, you know, if you graduated college, you don't have any job horizons, and you need direction, you're just like, what's going to happen? How long? I think back to when I hurt my back and I had major back surgery and was laid up for a long time, and I was crying out, how long, God, how long do I have to keep dealing with this, to sing this song? Or when I was betrayed by a friend, you feel all alone. You ever been there? And you're crying out, how long, God, how long till something finally looks up? And waiting on God, I guess like all waiting, it's tough. And it seems that in the moment, while we're waiting, it just takes forever, doesn't it? Have you ever been there? Have you been there with waiting on God? Maybe you're there this morning, and you're waiting on God. Maybe it's for direction. Maybe it's a new job. Maybe it's for something in your health finally to stabilize, and you don't go from one thing to one thing, or one of your children to return to God, and you just say, how long, God? Or maybe you're just waiting for encouragement. Just say, I need something, God. How long do I need to sing this song? Do I need to wait? Waiting even on God, it seems, is a constant battle, doesn't it? And this is a battle we see today as we return to our old buddy Joseph this morning in Genesis. We're in Genesis 40 this morning. And we'll continue his story. Joseph, as you're turning here, Joseph, he was the favorite son of his father when he was growing up. And because of this, his brothers envied him to the point of hatred. And sure, Joseph was a bit spoiled, but he never deserved what was happening to him. Because his brothers betray him. And then they throw him in a pit. Then they pull him out of the pit and they sell him to some traveling caravan of traders who then take him to Egypt, where he becomes a slave to one of the officers of the king of Pharaoh. Yet, you know what? Despite all of this, despite all of his troubles, God has him right where he wanted him to be. In fact, God blesses Joseph. And his master Potiphar, he noticed that God's blessing was upon him, and he put him over his whole household. Everything was under his care. He was the highest servant in the whole house. And as we saw last week, yet even in those good times, Potiphar's wife takes a liking to Joseph and wants to have her way with him. And when Joseph refused, she gets angry and accuses him falsely of trying to do something with her. And then Joseph is thrown into prison. He's left to die, basically, in prison. And you cry out, how long? How long? We can imagine Joseph saying, however, you know what? God's with Joseph. And even in prison, as we saw at the end of chapter 39 last week, that God was with him and blessed him. And soon, Joseph was placed over all the other prisoners as he continued to wait. And this is where we pick up this morning in his story. So we're in Genesis chapter 40. We're going to read through the chapter here. It's not a real long chapter, but it's an interesting turn of events that happens in Joseph's life here. All right, sometime after he was put over all these other prisoners, the cupbearer of the king of Egypt and his baker committed an offense against their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker. And he put them into custody into the house of the captain of the guard in the prison where Joseph was confined. The captain of the guard appointed Joseph to be with them. And he attended them, took care of them. They continued for some time in his custody. Now, a cupbearer and a baker, they were pretty important. We kind of say, oh, baker and cupbearer, what do they really do? They were pretty important in any kingdom at that time. You see, a baker, he was the one who would give food to the Pharaoh, make sure he's well-fed and things like that, and make sure that he's healthy and everything. And that was pretty important. But the cupbearer was even more important. You see, the cupbearer, he was the one who kept all of the wine that Pharaoh would drink, which means he was the last one to touch it before Pharaoh would drink it. So if anybody was going to poison Pharaoh, it could be the cupbearer. Or at worst, somebody else is trying to poison the Pharaoh, and the cupbearer, one of his jobs, in addition to giving it to the Pharaoh, he'd have to taste test it first. So if it was poison, he would go. And the Pharaoh would be safe. So the cupbearer is a pretty important person. So you have this baker and this cupbearer, and they're put in prison, right? And Joseph's put over them. So imagine this. These two guys probably had a really cushy life. And now they find themselves in prison. They're probably scared, very exposed right now. And Joseph's watching over them. And we pick up in verse 5. It says, one night they both dreamed, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison, each his own dream. And each dreamed with its own interpretation, or each dream meant something. When Joseph came to them in the morning, he saw that they were troubled. So he asked Pharaoh's officers, who were with him in custody in his master's house, "Why are your faces downcast today?" They said to him, "We've had dreams, and there's no one to interpret them." And Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Please, tell them to me." So set this picture here. Joseph doesn't know that he didn't know they had dreams the night before. All he knows is the next morning he sees them, and they look troubled. They look stressed out, upset. And he finds out they had these dreams, and he offers to help. So the chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph and said, "In my dream, there was a vine before me, and on the vine, there were three branches. As soon as it budded, it blossomed. Its blossoms shot forth, and the clusters ripened into grapes. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup and placed the cup into Pharaoh's hand." So that was his dream. And God gives Joseph the interpretation of these dreams. Again, another way God blesses him. And then Joseph said to him, verse 12, this is its interpretation. The three branches are 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office, and you shall place Pharaoh's cup in his hand as formerly when you were his cupbearer. Only remember me when it's well with you, and please do me the kindness to mention me to Pharaoh, and so get me out of this house, for I was indeed stolen out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also I've done nothing that they should put me into this pit. So Joseph, he interprets this cupbearer's dream, and it's a great interpretation. I mean, it's great because he says, you know, you're not going to be here. In fact, you only have 3 more days in prison because you're going to be restored to your position. You're going to be back. Imagine the cupbearer's like, yeah. And Joseph says, and by the way, since you're going to be restored, since you're going to be out, can you put a good word in for me? I mean, I didn't do anything to deserve where I am. In fact, I shouldn't even be in this country. So please, when you get out, put in a word. And so you can imagine the scene. The cupbearer is probably pretty happy, and the baker overhears this. It says, when the chief baker saw that the interpretation was favorable, so imagine him. He's like, oh, that was great. I'm going to tell my dream now. Yeah. And he said to Pharaoh, said to Joseph, I also had a dream. There were 3 cake baskets on my head. And in the uppermost basket, there were all sorts of baked food for Pharaoh. But the birds were eating it out of the basket on my head. That was my dream. And Joseph, God again gives him interpretation. Joseph says to him, this is the interpretation. The 3 baskets are 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head from you, and I'll hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat the flesh from you. Well, this is awkward, isn't it? I mean, they're in this happy moment, and Joseph's just like, he should have done this one first, right? End on a high note, but he does the other one first. So now it's awkward. He's like, you can imagine him saying that, and then there's silence. He's like, so yeah. Anyway, verse 20, it says, on the third day, 3 days later, which happens to be Pharaoh's birthday, he made a feast for all his servants and lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among the servants. He restored the chief cupbearer to his position, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hands, but he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted to them. Isn't that wild? So just what God told Joseph was going to be the case was exactly the case. But then check out how it ends. It says, yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. So even in this, Joseph can't catch a break, can he? How long to sing this song? How long, Lord? I mean, Joseph's life, it just kind of continues to be this roller coaster, doesn't it? Things are going well. Things are starting to really go well. My dad loves me, gave me a new coat, and then boom, taken down, right? And then he's down as far as he can go. and things start looking up again. Oh, I'm starting to get blessed in the house as a servant. Wow, this is great. Things are starting to look up. And then bam, unjustly accused of a crime he never committed. Back in prison. Oh, then things start going up a little bit. He says, maybe there's a little hope. God started to take care of me. Hey, God brought these guys to me. Wow, maybe this could be the way God's leading me out. Things are going great. And then bam, the guy forgets. I mean, wow. It just is going. And once again, Joseph stuck in the waiting. But you know what we find in our passage today is something very interesting while Joseph's in this waiting and in this roller coaster. Because today, what we find is encouragement for ourselves as we wait on God. Wherever we may be waiting on. Maybe we're waiting on God to work or to answer a prayer we have or to show us the next step he has for us. You see, like Joseph, even when we think nothing's happening, God is still working in our waiting. So we're going to look a little bit at this passage this morning. A couple things stand out in this passage about Joseph and his waiting that help us discover how we can make the most of those times that we're waiting on God. So we're not just waiting. So we begin here. Joseph's in prison. Again, he's waiting, right? He doesn't know if or when he'll ever be released. So he's just waiting. Yet in that waiting, God blesses him, doesn't he? He finds himself watching all these prisoners. In fact, he finds himself watching these two very prominent prisoners, right? He's over these two other prisoners who have dreams one night that they're a bit freaked out about. And the next morning, look back to verse 6. What happens? It says, when Joseph came to them in the morning, he saw that they were troubled. You know, like Joseph, we can make the most of our time waiting by looking intently. Looking intently at what is happening around us. Now, I don't know about you, but when I'm waiting on God, when things are trouble, I have troubles of my own, the last thing I want to do is look around. And certainly, it's reasonable for Joseph to be down here, right? To be pretty downcast, be like, what's wrong with me? You know, I've kept faithful to God, and every time I feel like things are starting to turn around, I get smacked down again. What am I doing wrong? You ever ask that question to God? You just feel like you can't get ahead? And you feel like you're back in that holding pattern? And you're just, what's wrong with me? Everybody else seems to be getting answers to prayer. Everybody else seems to be going, what is wrong with me? And a lot of times when we're in that pattern, when we're in that waiting, and God has us there, the last thing we want to do is look around. Yet that's the best thing we can do. That's what God desires us to do. That in the waiting, to look around. See, the truth is it's easy to be self-absorbed because we've been forgotten or we've been beaten down. And here's what Joseph does. With all of his troubles, he notices that these guys are a little freaked out. And he says, hey guys, what's up? Maybe I can help. In fact, Paul touches on this. On how we can do that, how we can look up in this case. Here's what he says in Philippians 2. He says, do nothing from rivalry or conceit, but in humility count others as more significant than yourselves. And when we're looking at ourselves, that's part of pride, what he's talking about. He says, so let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. You know what Paul's saying? You know when you're down? Look around. Look intently to see, hey, maybe God is working. Joseph looked up from his own waiting on God, and he saw that God had placed not just one person, two people right in front of him that were hurting, that were torn apart. You know, even in our waiting on God, he's working and he wants us to see it. The only way we see it is when we look. Start looking around intently. Because God may be bringing someone before you, before me, before us, who needs Jesus, who may need encouragement, maybe at your work. Look up from your desk or at school. Look around when you're in the hallway. Because God may be bringing somebody right in front of you that you can help, who may be hurting even more than we are. God often has us waiting because he has something or someone for us to reach. And he wants to use us in our waiting. And while seeing a need, it's important and it's big, seeing a need does nothing unless there's action involved, right? So another way that we make the most of our waiting on God is to act, or in acting selflessly, right? We put others' needs above our own, or we say, how can I help serve? So in seeing that these men were troubled, Joseph, you know, he didn't see that they were troubled and say, eh, that's a shame. And he didn't see him and go, well, now you know how it feels, you know. I'm down too. Let me tell you about me. He didn't do that, did he? What did he say? He says, well, how can I help? What can I do? And they explained to him, they had dreams, but they didn't know what they meant. Now picture this. This would have to hurt Joseph just a little bit. Because you know what happened to him years before? He had some dreams, didn't he? God gave him dreams, and he didn't necessarily know what they meant. So he was in the same boat they were. He didn't know what they meant, or if he did know what they mean, certainly there were no signs of them ever coming to fruition in what God was talking about, or for him to be encouraged about it. But yet, we find Joseph saying, you know what, I know I haven't had much looking up, but he says, do not interpretations belong to God? Please, tell them to me. Maybe I can help. Isn't that wild? That even in our hurting and in our waiting, we can look to others and say, well, how can I serve someone? I mean, how could Joseph do that? You know how? Because he trusted God. Because Joseph was trusting in God. His life was in God's hands. He had seen that over and over again. That even though he's down, he wasn't crushed, right? And he trusted, hey, if I'm in God's hands, he's going to work. He'll lead me. He'll rescue me. Or at the minimum, he'll be with me. So I don't have to worry about that. So now I'm free. And I'm free to do whatever God places right before me. To serve selflessly. You know, here's an important saying. It's one of my favorite quotes of all time. And here's what it says. If I knew that tomorrow was the end of the world, I would plant a tree today. You love that saying? You know, that saying, it wasn't said by some tree-loving hippie. You know, some tree hugger. Some environmentalist that said that. You know who it was said by? Or who it's attributed to? Martin Luther. One day somebody asked Martin Luther, hey, if you knew Jesus was coming back tomorrow, what would you do today? And he said, I'd plant an apple tree. And you're sitting there going, oh, wow, Martin Luther loved the environment? No, it's not an environmental quote. You know what he's talking about? He's talking about God's providence and responsibility. Here's basically what he's saying in that. He's saying, you know what? If Jesus returns tomorrow, well, that's his responsibility. I can do nothing to change that. I can do nothing to control that. That's his. What's mine, or what's my responsibility, is to do what God places before me. To continue the work that he's given me, regardless of what God does. So If I've been planting trees, I'll continue to plant trees, even if it's only going to be around for one day. You see, that's trusting God. And sometimes we can get so down in the waiting, and we can sit there and say, God's got to work in me first. Now, God wants to free us from that. God says, you've given this to me, and I'm with you. And if we truly believe that, it should free us, right? To look around and to say, all right, God, what have you placed here, and what can I do while I'm waiting? See, sometimes we get in that pattern and we just sit back and we just say, all right, I guess that's now it's a good excuse to sit around. No, God has us waiting for a reason. And he wants us to trust him and discover it and then to walk in it. And in trusting God for ourselves, we act selflessly, serving those he places before us. And that's time well spent in waiting. In fact, whenever we're waiting on God, and wherever you're waiting on God this morning, you know what? Look around. See what he's doing. Then act selflessly. But you know what? While you're doing that, make even better use, because cling tightly. In the midst of looking to others and looking what God has for you, has placed right before you, right before us, cling tightly to him. Because everything in us is going to want us to worry about ourselves. And it's going to keep saying, what about me? Well, what about me? And look at that. I mean, this is all Joseph seemingly had was God. I mean, even he goes to the cupbearer and he says, hey, I'm doing you a solid here. I'm telling you something really cool. So remember me. But he didn't. Cupbearer didn't remember him, right? Because that's a harsh reality a lot of times we find. When we put our trust in people, often people let us down. But you know who never lets us down? You know who's always with us? God's always with us. God is ever faithful. And you know, people can help us, and God can use people to help us. But when we're clinging to him, we're going to see that. So God alone can sustain us. In fact, the psalmist talks about that. Psalm 63 is a psalm of trusting in God and going through some of these pits and just waiting on him. And the psalmist says this. He says, for you have been my help, and in the shadow of your wings, I will sing for joy. You know what that means? That means I can't be out in the open. I'm too exposed. But you know what? As long as I know you've got me, that's my only joy. And he says, my soul clings to you. Your right hand upholds me. Holds us up. See, I look at Joseph. He's down in that prison, continuing to wait on God. The cupbearer's freed. Yet, nothing. In fact, as we're going to find out a little later, 2 whole years go by. 2 years of nothing. I mean, if I were Joseph, I'd crumble at this point. I'd be like, man, I've got nothing. But Joseph doesn't crumble. You know why? Because he's clinging to God. He's clinging to God in everything he has to say, no matter what things look like, I'm going to keep looking for what you have. And I'm going to keep doing what you put before me because I know you've got me. So where are you waiting on God? You know, a great question we can ask ourselves this morning is, do I trust that God's got me? If I do, then why aren't I making the best use of my time in the waiting? The truth is that wherever we find ourselves this morning, you know, we could be waiting for God to work, or we could be looking and saying, you know, God, I pray to you and I see everybody else getting answers to prayer and I don't see answers to prayer. Or God, I've been serving you faithfully and I've been doing everything right and I don't see any movement. Maybe I'm witnessing to my neighbor or witnessing to a friend and it's never making any headway. Just throw me a bone. Wherever we are this morning, you know what? God's with us. And God may not bring us out of our situation right away. God might not bring us out of our situation at all. Do you know that? But if God doesn't, or if we have to wait longer, here's what we have to hold on to. That God has us there for a reason. And we only know what that is if we look around to see what he's doing and look to act. All the while clinging, often desperately, to him. You see, even in our waiting, God has us there for a reason. Let's pray.